Warning, Small Business Naked contains illicit business content. Real stories from real small business owners. You're listening to Small Business Naked with Nick and Johnny. It's time to get naked.
Hey, small business owner, you're listening to Small Business Naked. I'm Nick.
And I'm Johnny Battle.
And today, John, it's a What's Up episode.
We're back. We're happy to hear from you. We're happy to, I want to say see you, but we're happy to broadcast for you.
We're happy to be talking together in Studio B here in Highlands Ranch at my house.
We got a great episode. It gets a little heated there in the middle of it, a little political feistiness regarding employees and other stuff, but I won't say too much because you're going to love it.
Yeah, you're going to love it. We're going to talk about what happened to us, what was of the summer of 2015 for Nick and Johnny, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up, what can you expect, and when will you be able to hear Small Business Naked moving forward on an ongoing basis.
And there's some great business lessons in there today, so get out your notepad.
And have a cuppa. A cup of coffee and grab your pen. So thanks for joining us today. And right now we've got some sponsors you're going to hear from.
Today I checked in with Ryan Shank, number 3 from M Help Desk. So you're number 3. Do they call you that? They call you number 3?
Yeah, it's sort of like the basketball player, Chris Paul. You know, they're like, CP3, employee 3.
What does M Help Desk do?
Yeah, so M Help Desk helps service businesses get more organized, win more jobs, and grow their business. So it helps them do everything from scheduling all the way to work order management and job management, and then helps them with the quotes and the estimates and payments. And then we integrate with accounting software like QuickBooks. So it's an end-to-end solution to do everything inside of your business.
M Help Desk. Get organized, get more business, get shit done. Check them out at mhelpdesk.com.
So Johnny Battle, what's up?
Well, it's been a long time since we've recorded. And do you know how long it's been?
You know, I don't know. Our last episode was episode 40, and this is 41. But that tells me nothing about how much time has lapsed since you and I have been in the studio.
Well, I can tell you it's been a while because on your window still is the winter foam to keep out the cold from last winter.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything either because I don't ever take that down. it keeps the hot out.
Oh,
and it keeps it nice and cool in here in the wintertime.
But it's so sad and dark in here.
But that's because we have to have it all quiet in here as well. So we still got all the, we're back in Studio B. We got all the foam and the curtains and all the sound dampening things. But this is Small Business Naked. We're not talking about decorating Nick's basement.
Yeah, and this is our What's Up episode, and we just kind of fill you in on certain little things that are going on with our business or life in general, business related, of course. And we're just going to kind of get back into the groove here. We missed you guys. We know you've been out there. We've heard your comments, so we're back.
I got some flack from some folks, John.
I know you did.
People are like, "What the hell happened?
You're done. You're off the air."
We were away. Let's see. The last post, John, just so you know, was May 14th.
Okay.
And it's August 24th.
Well, we're back. We're bad. He's black.
So,
I'm mad.
So 3 months. We're back, and lots has happened in our businesses.
Why don't you tell me what's going on with you? You have a lot going on.
Let's see. Since May 14th, I don't remember. I think I introduced the problem that I was going through right as the last time we recorded. My project manager left. He gave me notice. He gave me, you know, a good amount of notice, John. He gave me like 3-4 weeks, which was fantastic. However, the problem I had was when he, on his last day, I only had a couple weeks before, my wife and I went on a big long trip to Italy. So we were gone for 2 weeks out of the country, and I had no project manager here in Colorado.
Did everything go okay while you were gone?
It did. Thankfully, we had planned well. I planned to have some rather large jobs happening while I was out of town. So the hardest part of what we do is, you know, the starting and stopping of projects. But when we've got a bigger project, it's, you know, the management of it's fairly easy. The guys can call me or email me if they had questions, and that's probably what they did while I was gone in Italy. So everything went fine.
What did you learn through all this process? But through this process, what did you learn?
The process of going to Italy or the process?
No, the process of losing your project manager, has that taught you anything or,
you know,
anything that the listening audience could take away from that?
I think so. So, you know, I was always pushing, hey, we got to get bigger so I can focus on the things that I'm good at and, you know, grow. And everyone talks about this cliche in business, work on your business, not in your business, right? We all hear this all the time. And if you're not, you know, if you're doing one and not the other, then you're not successful enough, really, is kind of the mantra and the feeling I think that everybody has. And, you know, I kind of succumbed to that, I don't know, that idea. And, you know, putting somebody in place in a management position, you know, it did free me up a lot of time for sales, but I didn't need all of that time, obviously, because now that I've taken over the sales and the project management piece, now I'm just working a full-time job. So I don't feel like I probably work 50, 60 hours a week, whereas before I was probably working 30.
So do you feel like you still have time to work on the business, or are you in it most of the time?
I feel like, you know, it's still a learning process of getting everything back in shape, but we've been doing it now for a couple months. But I do feel like I have time to work on the business, but it's time, you know, it may be evenings, it may be weekends. It's definitely more time than just a 40-hour week, but most entrepreneurs are gonna, you know, they're gonna understand and they're gonna identify with that. But I think the things I learned was, you know, I had a staff meeting about a month after my project manager left. And I asked the guy, so how am I doing? You know, what's the good, the bad, and the ugly from your guys' standpoint? What do you think? Give me some feedback. And they all said that things were going smoother now that I was managing the projects because there wasn't this middle person in between the customer, me and them. And so, and I was, I think, getting, you know, the stuff to them a little bit better. Now, I did hire somebody to assist me in the field, but he just moves equipment. So I hired a guy named Bob. We like to hire.
It's a unique name.
Yeah.
Bob.
We like Bob. And Bob's my material manager, I guess you'd call him. He works part time. And he works probably somewhere between 17 and 25 hours a week. He drives the van around. He moves trailers around. He makes sure the guys have what they need. If they need something, they call Bob. And we've just been working through how do you manage that so we don't enable the guys to just call whenever they need something. You know, it's kind of like I compare it to, you know, raising children sometimes. You know, if you just get the kids what they need all the time and, you know, they don't get to feel the burden of their bad choice, then they're going to continue to make bad choices. So I've been working with Bob to make sure, hey, now if the guys ask for something for tomorrow, that's fantastic. You can plan, you can put it in your schedule, you can bring it to them. But if they call you at, let's say, 9 o'clock on Tuesday and say, hey, Bob, can you bring me another gallon of whatever? The answer should be no. You should have called me yesterday. And you can go, if you really need it today, you can go to the paint store and get it. So that's what we're kind of working through. He has been very organized and, you know, handling all those pieces that I just don't have time for as moving trailers and organizing the excess materials and equipment that we have. And it's worked out well. I mean, obviously I'm working a few more hours a week, but I feel like the projects are going smoother and the guys are having their stuff in a timely fashion. And I feel more connected with my guys because they're seeing me on a regular basis. And I feel more connected with my customers because before I would, you know, I'd sell the job, I'd hand the job over to my project manager and I, you know, they wouldn't see me anymore, you know? So I was super busy this summer and now their kids are back in school. And I've got a little bit more wiggle room in the schedule. The other thing I'm going to try and do with the podcast is I'm trying to get somebody that will edit the podcasts for me, so I don't have to do that piece because that was the other thing. you know, once you and I would record, then it's like down and get all the pieces together.
Right, right.
And so I found a guy on Fiverr.
Oh, sweet.
He lives in Sweden. So still communicating with him. Haven't nailed it all down yet, but hopefully in the next week or so.
Well, this is a good topic, I think, for our listeners, because this is yin and yang to some degree, because I did the totally opposite of you. I equally lost a manager this year, and I backed away from the business as far as doing stuff in it. I started not going to the office first thing in the morning and letting my people do what they're supposed to do and leaving more often. I used to be this guy who had to be there all the time and show my staff that I was just as dedicated as they were, and I would get there before them and leave after them. And we had a lot of problems this year, so I had a little bit of burnout, I guess, inside. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to let them do their damn jobs, what I hired them for. And so there's been days, which is so odd for me, I don't even show up for work. And I told my staff, I says, I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be here less. I hired you to do the job. You know what to do. I'm your mentor. I'm your teacher. If you need anything, give me a call. But if you need me to do something and it's in your job description, I'm not going to do it for you. And so that was kind of cool. So I backed away completely and let them do what they do. And quite frankly, they've been doing a better job than when I'm there, I think.
How many folks you have in the office?
There is currently 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 in there.
Okay. And how long is this?
4 full-timers.
How long have you been under this new management style?
I'd say since midsummer, at least.
So middle of July?
Yeah, maybe even a little before that.
So maybe 2 months?
Yeah, but right after our spring season.
Okay. So the spring season is your busy season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and so then when things started to mellow out, now when things pick up again, because I know doesn't your season get a little bit busier again in the fall?
A little
here?
Bit, yes.
Mm-hmm. So will you kick up the pace and go back in, or are you going to let it ride?
I will still stay out. I will be doing some things that are in my job description. You know, I'm heavily involved with the marketing and some of the sales side of things. Not doing the sales, but you know, kind of correlating the sales and what to say and what we're going to sell and what campaigns we're running at certain times. So I'm more involved with that this time of year. But other than that, I'm going to continue to let them do their job.
Now, you had some particular struggles early in the summer with people and staffing. How did all that play out?
The economy's kicking here. And so when the economy's kicking, we use generally low skilled laborers, and they were very, very hard to find this year because
everybody was probably wanting them.
Yeah. I mean, that pool is so small. And if you think about it, and I don't think in where we are in our state, we're alone. I can imagine that this can be extrapolated across the world in kind of industrial type of economies.
Maybe in Australia.
Even in Australia, of course, and Singapore, and I heard the same story in Taipei, Taiwan, that they have this problem at times. And the economy is kicking, and so this pool of low-skilled laborers is fairly small in comparison to the rest of the working population anyways. Mm-hmm. And we still need these folks. But in my opinion, and this is, you know, purely my opinion, the way kids are raised nowadays is they don't want to do hard manual labor. And when I say they, I'm generalizing, so it's not everybody. But for the most part, kids don't want to work their ass off like they used to.
You're talking about those millennials?
Is that what they're called now? I don't even know what they're called.
I think millennial. I keep hearing that word.
I just call them lazy-ass kids. I don't know what the
There's lazy-ass adults, too.
But so that's probably not politically correct, so we're not going to call them lazy-ass kids. And again, not all of them. There's some, you know, I ran into Chick-fil-A 2 nights ago. There's this high school kid in there that was just amazing. So, I mean, I'm generalizing, but for the most part, these young kids, they don't want to do manual labor. They don't want to work hard. They want an office job, maybe retail, something a little less kind of physical. And then they probably say to themselves, well, I don't mind making less money because I don't need a lot of money, so I don't want to work that hard. You know, back in my day, you wanted money, so you made more money by working hard physically to a large degree. And that's not happening anymore. And I think you turned me on to this guy and his podcast. I don't know podcast, but his videos. Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs. He has a full-on campaign that talks about this problem we have in our society about people need... We still need people for the trades. And college isn't the best solution for everybody. And the trades are still a viable option for a lot of people, but we're lacking. Those jobs are understaffed. We need more people to do them. It's hard to find good people in those areas. And so it's going to continue to be a problem for us in the United States. And like I said, other places too. People do not want to do those types of jobs for the most part, and we need those jobs to get done.
Yeah. I think we talked to Charlie, what was Charlie's last name, from Pimlico Plumbing?
He was the guy from Europe, London, I believe.
He's in London, and he owns a plumbing company, but they do some other trades as well. And he's, you know, he was always talking about wanting to work on, you know, getting kids and providing great jobs and opportunity for them to become skilled and having a training program and doing all those kinds of things. But it's really hard to get folks from this generation that want to work with their hands. Everybody wants to jump on the computer and sit in an office and make $100,000 a year and not really do anything.
And, you know, one thing that was unique about him, I remember in the interview, and if you guys haven't heard it, you can go back and listen to it. Charlie from Pimlico Plumbing. You know, he had some of these plumbers, if my memory serves me correctly, that were making $50,000 to $100,000 a year. You know, now, if you figure out a way to do that, you know, you got people that are going to want to do those types of jobs.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't think all the trades, you know, for example, what we do, mowing lawns, probably pretty hard to find a $100,000 a year lawn mowing guy, you know.
Yeah, but I bet you could start your own lawn mowing company and make $100,000 a year.
Well, you probably could.
Would be my guess.
But the kids don't want to do that either because that's too much work.
That's a lot of work. Well, Charlie Mullins is the name of the guy, and it was episode 35.
Perfect.
So only five episodes ago, but that was a great interview, and he sent us some books. He's got a book that came out, and it's all about, you know, his rags to riches story, because he was raised in a family that was not well to do, and he went and apprenticed under a plumber, and he's made millions now.
And here's the deal, is that this problem we know is going to occur, and it's going to continue to get worse. And if you're in the service business and people are your product, meaning that they're the ones providing the service, you know, this is a huge problem to solve. And so I think the solution is you kind of got to come up with ways to help these folks that are working for you kind of prosper and find a way where they can make more money. And so, you know, when you have a job that, for lack of a better word, is just shit work, meaning it's hard, tough, hard labor. It's not something you love, but it's got to be done. I think the pay has got to be pretty darn good so these folks can say, you know what, I don't love this, but I make darn good money doing it, and I work for a nice place. They're good to me, so I continue on. I think you got to come up with something like that to keep these people around. But the days of paying these laborers, you know, cheap or even average wages, I don't think works that much anymore. And again, it's not just about money, because we know if you look at any list, there's a lot of that people, employees, want more than money. Money's, I think, usually always third or fourth down on the list, but it's still a big one.
But it's pretty big.
Yeah, and it helps.
If you pay people well, they'll put up with a lot of shit.
Yeah, if you can pay people well and then do some of those other things that are on the top of the list, like thank them, recognize them, you know.
Create a fun work environment.
Create a fun work environment. You know, you got something there. So that's what our problem has taught me this year, is how to kind of find a way to pay people, you know, more of a premium and keep people either around or coming back, since we're seasonal. So it's been a great year, in the sense that even though we've had a shitty gross sales year and things are down and things went bad, it's been a great year because I've learned so much. I've learned to even be a little more modest about the business. I've learned that things can knock you off your feet. I've learned that we have to be more efficient, which we did. We have to treat people even better than we probably did. And so it's been a great, great kind of learning lesson. So it wasn't all bad. We probably needed it to happen to us so we can become a better company.
Are you making any other changes?
Well, I don't know anything specifically that comes to mind, but the big one is in the area of labor, that really trying to tweak it and find a way to recruit and retain people. And other services, you know, we're big on excuse me, on doing some of our other services, which is the fertilization side of the business, which is requires less labor and has better margins and all that good stuff. So we're working on that also. So there's a few things going on there, but that doesn't solve our problem. It just helps us out a bit.
Yeah, one of the things that we've learned over the summer, I don't know if you remember, but in the spring, I was having a really hard time with retention and really trying to figure out ways to create a work environment in a place where people wanted to stay kind of longer term. And I feel like we've solved that problem. I put in a few new, bonus plans to really to enable the guys to make more money. I think we talked about on a previous show that we've implemented a profit sharing program, which is really just coming into its own here in the third quarter of the year, because this is the first quarter that it's actually they'll get to receive the profits from that. But I kind of decided I needed to take a step further, and I created another profit sharing program, or not profit sharing, but bonus program that was based on, production and production hours. And so I told my guys, my goal is to get as many crew leads to the point where they can make over $50,000 a year as we possibly can. And they were kind of like, oh, there's no way, that's not possible. But then when I ran the numbers and showed them, basically if they were putting in 40 hours a week and they weren't putting 40 hours in a week, if they did that, then they would make X amount of dollars, and then I was going to bonus them. And so it actually is feasible for our team leads to make over $50,000 a year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you can treat people well and pay them well, that does help them stick around. And a lot of times as a business owner, the pay thing is, it's your payroll is one of your biggest expenses, and it's something that you can manage. So, you're at this crossroad of do I keep, the salaries lower? Do I raise them if I can? There's no one way to fix it. It's not a science or anything like that. Each case is probably different, but you got to come up with a balance of treating people well and paying them a nice wage. When I talk about this, I think about Costco. Costco pays its people. Well, first of all, to back up, Costco sells stuff really cheap. I don't know what their markup is. I think, don't quote me on this, but I thought they mark everything up 15% across the board, and that's it. I don't know if that's the number, but I heard something like that. And so they're on low margins anyways, but they're paying their people better than any other retail establishment. So what's the secret there? And Costco's killing it. So I think they said, we want good people. We're going to pay them a premium. We're going to take care of them. And we're going to sell a lot of stuff in the process. And by selling a lot of stuff, we're going to do a lot of volume, and we'll be able to make this all work. I'm sure it was more scientific than that, but it makes me think, Costco probably doesn't have a retention problem, I would imagine. What can I learn from Costco about that? And what I've learned is maybe I need to hire better people and pay them better wages.
Yeah, I don't know if I've heard the story about Costco, but I do remember reading about the Container Store. And the Container Store has a very similar philosophy where they pay all their associates much higher wage. I want to say, I don't know exactly what the number is, but I want to say their average associate makes like $45,000 a year, where a typical retail full-time employee, in the United States would maybe make $25,000 a year. But I remember reading that they were saying they're able to pay their guys more and their gals more and have less of them. And so same outlay of cash, but the people are so much more committed so that they don't need as many employees.
Yeah, I forgot. I remember what you said now, because I remember reading that book and they said, one good employee equals, I'm making maybe the numbers up here, but one good employee equals three average ones.
Yeah.
So they were like, let's find one good one, pay them well, and it's like we have three people. So really, we're actually paying payrolls less because we don't have three average people. We're giving it, you know, less of that amount to one. And but they're doing the work of three people. So that was their philosophy. That's a pretty good philosophy, I think.
Yeah. You know, then that flies in the face of, I don't know if you keep up on stuff in the news and whatnot, but one of the topics that I've read today, and I'll admit it came from Facebook. I'm on Facebook way too much, but is this whole topic of, you know, raising the minimum wage. And I think they've done it out in, let's say it's San Francisco or somewhere out in
Washington,
California.
Washington, maybe, wasn't it Washington?
Yeah, they want to do a $15 an hour minimum wage. And I don't know about you, but that just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's a bunch of crap.
You know, let's pay somebody more money just for showing up.
Those jobs were never intended for people to, you know, people say, I can't make a living off of 10 bucks an hour or 12 bucks an hour. Well, those jobs were never intended for people to make a living off of.
Right.
You know, they were intended to supplement your income with a part-time job, or they were starter jobs for people in high school or college getting a start. They weren't intended to live off of. So if you're making, you know, here's some hate mail coming. If you're making 10 or 12 bucks an hour doing that and you're in your 30s or 40s, you probably did something wrong and you shouldn't be where you are. So you need to find a way to figure out how to climb the ladder. It's where you start. And so to me, making the hourly wage 15 bucks an hour is so socialistic. You know, got to make everybody make more money because they're not making enough at 10 or 11. Well, you know what? It's not our problem, it's your problem, because if you're only making 10 or 11, that's how valuable you are to the workplace. And the only way to make more money is to make yourself more valuable to the market. And so you have to learn more, you have to treat customers better, you have to do things to climb the ladder. That's your job. It's not the government's job to mandate that. So I think it's a bunch of crap.
And there's a lot of places that you can use those same skills that if you're the best of the best, you can go make better money basically doing the same job. Because if you're a clerk at, let's say, Walmart gets a lot of flack for their low wages. I know that recently they've raised them and all that stuff. But you can take that same skill that you use as a clerk in Walmart and you can go do a customer service job, you know, where you're doing something online and you're answering phones, or you could go do a sales job. You know, you could go sell. There's lots of things in sales that if you're personable and you're helpful and you're able to sell more of whatever your company sells, you're going to make more money. And so you can take those same skills in another place and go make more money.
Well, you know, you say, I agree with you. And you to bring up Walmart, and Walmart gets a lot of criticism all the time, which I think is crazy because a company like Walmart is amazing. It is such a great entrepreneur story where this guy, Sam Walton, started with nothing in one store and built this empire. Now, everyone should be grateful of that because that means in America, at least, you can start with nothing and build an empire. Like who wouldn't want to live in that kind of a place? And so now that he's an empire, you beat him up. But he started with nothing like everyone else, and now he's successful. Let's beat him up. And here's the deal. If you don't like how much you make at Walmart, go get another freaking job somewhere else, you lazy ass. You know, that's my feeling, is that quit criticizing Walmart. Don't work there if you don't like the wages. Instead of trying to mandate that they pay more, it's up to you. Take responsibility and go find another job. You don't have to work there.
You know what? Walmart's actually not that bad of a place to work. I actually interviewed for Walmart many moons ago when I first left let's see, I left corporate world. I guess it was right before corporate. When I was a youth pastor, left that world, and then I was going into, you know, corporate stuff. And I remember interviewing, I don't remember if it was Walmart or Sam's, but their managers make really good money. Like you can make, you know, I think starting salary for a manager is $45,000. And I think the requirement was that you had, you know, a college education, but then you also have to be willing to relocate because they're going to put you into their training program, and then you have to be willing to go anywhere in the country that the company needs you. So anybody that works at Walmart has that opportunity to work up into a management role. I remember their benefits were fantastic because it's a huge company. They may need to go get some education. They may need to invest in themselves, you know, and go from that $9 or $10 an hour job and work up into management. But that opportunity exists.
I can agree with that statement even more. You know, I went to this reunion party, a high school reunion party, and I met this guy's girlfriend she no longer does it, a store manager at a Walmart, probably a very successful Walmart. And Walmart, I guess from her, they're very big on bonusing. So if they, you know, they have probably a modest salary, but if they meet these milestones, their bonuses are great. She told me she made $300,000 a year managing a Walmart store.
Are you kidding?
No. And, you know, with all her bonuses and everything like that, you know, I think her base pay was $100,000, $150,000 and another $100,000, $150,000 in bonuses. So, you know, you could start as a stock boy, stock girl, you know, putting product on the shelf and grow on the ladder. That's, if you're not making that kind of money you want, it's your fault. It's your responsibility, not the government to mandate your wage. You can do it. And so it goes back to no one taking personal responsibility, Nick. You know, we want to have this minimum wage set because, you know, people can't do it themselves. Well, but they can. They're just too damn lazy or lack the get up and go to do it.
Well, they don't show up for work. They show up late. They got to have this day off for that.
Yeah, and, exactly.
You know, it's one excuse after another. And, you know, to bring this back, I know this is kind of turned into almost a political talk, but, you know, for small business.
I feel good now, though.
Yeah, I know. For small business, now that you said that about that manager, that's exactly the model that I've created in my company. You know, I start everybody at $9 an hour, and that's not a livable wage, but I don't want anybody to stay there. I want everybody to move up, and I want everybody to get to the point where they can make $50,000 a year painting houses, which sounds ridiculous, but it's possible. But it takes the team working together. It takes everybody showing to work on time, coming to work with a great attitude, doing the right things every day. And that opportunity exists.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you.
And so but I can't afford to pay everybody on the team $50,000 a year. So you've got to have, you know, the people that are learning, they're making a lower wage, but as their skill increases and the value that they bring every day increases, then they get to make more money.
There was a guy on Business Insider I read about. He was a young, successful technology entrepreneur, I think in Seattle, and he paid everybody in his company $70,000 a year, everybody, equally. And there was this big old outcry, like, what a great job he's doing. Everybody can make a fair living wage now. And a year or two went by, and his company is in trouble. He had so much pushback from that. Some people were mad that the guy or gal who's doing less work is making the same amount as them. That is such a socialistic kind of view instead of, you know, you get what you're worth.
Yeah, because he raised the lower people, but he didn't raise the people that were bringing more value and the guys that were up in the chain, you know, so to speak, the managers. I remember reading about that guy too, and it was basically imploding on itself.
Yeah, and you know, and I believe everybody should not be treated equally, but they should be treated fairly. And so, if you don't bring huge value to a company as an employee, you should not be paid a huge amount of money. If you bring a lot of value to a company, you should be compensated more than everyone else. So you should be paid on your efforts and your result, mostly your result. Mm-hmm. And so I don't believe in treating or paying everyone equally at all, but I do think you should treat them fairly.
You know, I want everybody to move up. So I've got one guy right now who's, he's still a prep person, and he wants to become a crew lead. Well, the other day, I was meeting him on a job. He shows up 15 minutes late. I leave. I come back later in the afternoon to check on him and this other guy, who's also a prep guy. They were working on kind of a side project for us. and the other guy was there working away, and I'm like, well, where's the other guy? And the guy that was there was like, I don't know. He just decided he didn't want to stay anymore, and he left. You know, it was like 2 p.m, and it was a Friday. And it's like, okay, if you really want to move up, you've got to be the guy that shows me I'm gonna come on time or early. I mean, I want early, and I'm willing to stay as long as it takes to get the job done. We didn't get the job done by the amount of stuff that if he would have stayed, we would have been able to finish. So the job didn't get finished because of him. And so I have no confidence that he can be a crew lead. So he will not move up in my organization until he can prove to me that I can trust him, that he's going to have our company's best interest in mind. And if you're, you know, somebody working at Walmart and you have that same kind of employee mentality of, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm going to just put in my the bare minimum, or I'm just going to try to get by, but I want the minimum wage to go up so I get more. That's just shit. That's just.
See, that guy's not.
You're never going to get anywhere.
No, he did it all to himself. I mean, he's personally responsible for his actions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, So, you know, on just lastly, I will keep rambling on, but maybe someone could also email in that knows more about this. But, and I know you know about this a little bit too, Nick. I am amazed at the company Chick-fil-A. I was there the other night, and the people that they hire to work at these fast food places amazes me. Now, they're not all great and good, but most of them are great. You go to Wendy's.
90% of them over there at Chick-fil-A are rock stars.
Yeah.
I could give any of them a job, probably.
You go to Wendy's, you go to McDonald's right across the street, they have different people. And
they may not speak English. They may just speak. And I get that there are some positions in companies that's okay. But if you put somebody behind the counter and I'm supposed to communicate with you as a customer, you should be able to speak English. I should be able to have a conversation with you.
I agree. I don't have strong feelings on that, but I would think most of America would agree with you. Yes. And I never seen any Spanish speaking people at Chick-fil-A. Have you?
I have.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
They speak good English. English. Oh, that's what I meant, that you can understand them. But anyways, that aside, these people are amazing. So if any of our listeners worked at Chick-fil-A, they know about Chick-fil-A, if they know how they hire them or how they obtain such great people, I would really love to know and hear that. I talked to one of the leads at the store. He pretty much said, you know, we interview 10 people to find one. And I'm thinking, I can't even find 10 people to come in the door, you know, so how do you do that? But he says that they have really high standards, and they keep people to those high standards, and they're obviously doing something right. They're just awesome.
I wonder if we could interview a franchise owner.
That would be great.
Chick-fil-A. We could ask that question. How do you get such great people?
You know, that would be a really good. But put that on your list. That is an awesome, because they're definitely doing something way better than everybody else. And we all have this problem, so that'd be good. And if you, like I said, if you know or worked at Chick-fil-A, check us out, send us an email, or hit us up on Facebook.
Yeah, I wonder if their wages are higher than the others.
Good question. I don't know that either.
Or if it's just they look for a certain caliber of folks and they just hold them to a higher standard.
Yeah.
A lot of it with employees is, what kind of standard do you hold your employees to?
That's a whole other podcast, but you're exactly right. That is a lot. And God, we should say that for another podcast, because I think that's a great discussion. Anyways, that was our summer. We're back. We're going to be interviewing business owners again. And if there's anything that you'd like to hear in particular, please let us know. And if you missed us, please let us know, because it makes us feel good inside.
Yeah, and if you haven't given us a review on iTunes, please do so. But please don't mention the fact that we were off for 3 months. That probably wouldn't. I don't know. If you have to, you can. But we've got some good shows coming up. We've got a couple of shows that Johnny and I recorded before we went into summer that still need to be edited. So we've got a really good conversation with a past guest, Timbo Reed, on marketing and on, I believe we talked about your message. Is that what we talked about? I got to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, that was right. Your message. And we have a guy from who taught instruments. A school for...
A music school?
Music school, thank you.
Yeah, out in California. And that was a great interview, and we'll be airing that. But here's my commitment to you guys that are listening. And
all right, write this down, everybody, because he's sharing it with the world.
So we're going to go every other week. We're going to have a show come out. And some of them may be where we're interviewing folks, and some of them may be where it's just Johnny and I chatting. Some of them may be like our talk with Timbo Reed, where we're talking
marketing.
Yeah.
What days will those come out? Because I like to know, if I'm listening to a podcast, I'm like every X day this comes out, I want to check it out.
I'm going to shoot to that they can go live on Thursdays.
So
I'm going to try and get this one out this Thursday.
New episode every other Thursday.
Every other Thursday, correct. Okay. Yeah. And if you've got folks, business owners that you would recommend that we talk to and have on the show, or just even industries, like, hey, it'd be nice to have somebody from... I don't know, the
porn industry, for example.
Yeah.
Not that I'd be interested in that conversation, but...
But if you'd be interested in a particular industry, we would love to go after them. I know John has a particular interest in... he wants me to go after a certain industry.
Yes, we're going to get him.
They're down in Florida, but we'll see if we get them. And John and I are going to a marketing conference coming up with our good friends down at Postcard Mania.
Hey, can we do a podcast from there?
Yeah, I think we could interview a couple people. It'd be fun.
Yeah,
we could interview our hosts, Tibbs, and
we'll share that with you. That would be a great marketing.
Joy, I bet you we could get
him.
Joy behind the microphone.
She's the owner of Postcard Mania. Real great.
I have Mike. It can travel.
Entrepreneur. Good. Good. Well, let's do it. Let's do it.
So we got some exciting shows coming up in the works for you guys. So thanks for listening to Small Business Naked. I'm Nick,
and I'm Johnny Battle. See ya.
You've been listening to Small Business Naked with Nick and Johnny. For more episodes and more information, go to smallbusinessnaked.com.